And Bev Harris, our special guest this hour, will take your phone calls, your stories next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Bev Harris with us. We'll get your calls. Bev, so you were saying that exit polling seems to be fading away. Why is that?
Well, I'm not sure. But one of the things I wanted to point out that's really important for people to understand is the exit polls now are actual exit polls for the first short amount of time. But as the voting machine results start being modemed in, the exit polls are actually the modemed in voting machine results.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you heard me. And you can actually sometimes see the switch, you know, where it'll be this guy's predicted to win, this guy, this guy's predicted to win now. And quite often that is the point at which the exit poll is, which they call an exit poll, is switching over to the feed. So in that sense, it shouldn't be surprising anymore that they match so exactly these predictions that they have on TV. They'll say, and they'll even say something I object to. They'll say, and the winner is, you know, and they'll have not even the votes in. With 56% of the votes,
I know
it. That's 3%.
Yeah, and the polls aren't closing yet or anything.
I mean, if they would at least say the projected winner is.
Right, exactly. The networks are pretty cautious about that, and they don't declare until those polls close in that particular state.
Polls close, but that doesn't mean that the vote totals have come in.
No, they haven't.
Yeah, because some of the vote totals, and by the way, this is another red flag. If you're looking for red flags of things where things may go wrong or maybe a little kinky, one of the other ones is the late coming votes. There's always these places that's like, well, we can't get the votes from this county until 10:30 at night because they make up some of the most ridiculous reasons. Yes, some of them are true, but some of them are ridiculous. You know, it's like because simultaneously the electricity went out in three locations and their car broke down, you know, or what? You needed to a little bit of extra time.
All right, to the phones we go now. Gary is in Santa Maria, California. Gary, you're on with Bev Harris. Go ahead.
Thank you. George, Bev, I talked to you years ago. I was a consultant that did the voter registration fraud analysis in L.A. County under Mike Huffington that stopped the ballot count by a superior court judge between he and Feinstein. And just in L.A. County, turned up 260,000 duplicate quad and up to 24 times an individual registered to vote, especially out in the Venice Beach area. We negotiated with the American Express to take the voter registration records and send them through the American Express anti-fraud software. Now, this is in 94. That software has really been enhanced. If anybody was serious about cleaning up the voter registration fraud, which goes ties hand in hand to motor voter and also all of the absentee voters that are just getting ballots sent out willy-nilly all over the places.
Right.
That anti-fraud credit card software just gobbles up the voter registration records and spits them out, but they passed a privacy law that the politicians exempt themselves from, but won't let any independent consultant using anti-fraud software look at their voter registration. That's kind of a bit of a red flag there as well. And the price was a half a cent a name. That's what the major credit card companies would charge any particular county, because you have to go county by county. They're all a little different. A half a cent a name guarantees the integrity of your voter registration list at no sweat off anybody's nose except the half a cent. One would think that our elections would be important enough to spend a half a cent per voter every 4 or 8 years in order to guarantee the integrity of the result. And I had a second question for you, if I can get a response to that.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go, you got the question or you want the response?
Yeah, Well, the response I can come up with now, if he wants.
Right,
and I do agree with him on those kinds of things. I did a similar kind of analysis in Tennessee. And you're right. Even after they supposedly cleaned the voter list, according to the Help America Vote Act, and by the way, California never really has. I don't get that with all their technology ability. But even after that, the voter lists were just a joke. I mean, they had all these duplicates, triplicates. They had a lot of people who had passed away on it, and then they were saying, well, we didn't update it from the death. I mean, when a person passes away, you send in the death certificate to the state. The state has that. I don't get it, why they're not cleaning up the voter lists.
Because and they don't want
And I'm so glad he mentioned the real risk is not that these bogus people are going to show up at the polling place. The real risk is absentee voting and an insider having all these bogus names. He knows they're never going to show up to contest anything because they don't even exist.
That's right. Or they're all dead.
I have a story.
Or they moved to another state 10 years ago and
they
took them off and they're like sleeper cells is what I would consider. You know, they basically have all these sleeper cells and they can send absentee ballots and those don't ever go to an actual person and they know they don't. And that is a huge risk for absentee voting fraud. And it's happened, by the way. It's not that this is a pie in the sky theory. It's happened. You know,
do I have time for my second question?
Yep, go.
Sure.
The other thing, I worked on Ross Perot's electronic town hall. You can't secure the internet. You can't secure voting by phone for the reasons you've already well articulated. However, the suggestion I had for Perot way back in 1994, and I worked directly with Perot, was in nowadays it would be smart. Phone petition signing. When you sign a petition to recall a politician, recall a judge, or put an initiative on the ballot, you state your name, you state your address, you have to sign that you are a registered voter, mm-hmm. You give up your anonymity. If we would go to smartphone petition signing or internet petition signing, but especially smartphone internet signing because they're individualized and mm-hmm. It has higher security than the PC that everybody can use, I think we could add a lot more democracy to our republic and fix a lot of these ailing politicians that aren't paying attention to electromagnetic pulse or GMOs or NSA and these things and start recalling these people through electronic initiative and referendum generated from a smartphone where you already give up your anonymity and it's not needed. I would like your opinion.
Absolutely correct. You know, that's the nut that to crack with internet and mobile phone voting is with voting, you know, where you need political privacy, it doesn't work. But with petition signing, there is no political privacy. There should be no political privacy with that. And it could easily be done that way. And it would be less expensive. That's one of the, I 100% agree.
You know, Bev, I've been in the news business since I was 19 years old. So I've always been fascinated with the election process. You know, I've interviewed in my career a number of presidential candidates, starting with George McGovern. That's a long, long time ago. But a lot of young kids just still don't get into it. You know, they don't like the word politics. They shy away from it. Yet when you get a little older, you begin to realize that these people are controlling your destiny. They're making the laws that could either give you a nice, comfortable life or screw you up. And so when you get a little older, you get more passionate about it. Do you find that to be the case?
Well, sort of. But, you know, young people get very, very passionate and turn out in droves when they think that the candidate represents something that's actually going to be meaningful to them. I mean, we certainly did, you know, they get very disappointed very quickly when they vote the guy in and it doesn't do what they thought. But, you know, the biggest problem, I think, with young folks is not that they don't understand that political behavior controls their destiny. It's that they feel like, you know, I'm voting for these guys and they're going to do exactly what they want and it's going to have nothing to do with what I want them to do. And I think that that's got some truth to it, unfortunately. And that is because the incentive system isn't really structured right. you know, where the incentives don't really reward a politician for serving his constituents anymore.
All right, let's go to Joey in Knoxville, Tennessee, east of the Rockies. Hi, Joey, you're up with us. Go ahead. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm a first-time caller.
Oh, great. Good to have you with us.
My question for your guest is, how does she feel about the new voter ID law, and does she think that it'll help against fraud in the future or make things worse? Thank you.
Well, thanks for the question. It's an excellent question because that's on a lot of people's minds. Unfortunately, the voter ID law doesn't address what actually happens. It addresses something that doesn't happen. What actually happens, for example, in Tennessee, is poll workers used voters' names on the list, I guess you'd say impersonating those voters, to cast votes. It was so bad that they actually invalidated a state senator election because poll workers were casting votes in people's names. But voter ID doesn't really help that. You see, it's done by insiders. Voter ID doesn't really help what happened in Alabama, you know, where a guy shows up to vote at the polls and somebody has already voted in his name. Guess who? It was the guy managing the absentee database. You know, it's the people on the inside, and voter ID doesn't address that. And the people, you know, it is a myth that you have these busloads of people showing up out from the outside, casting one by one, casting impersonation votes. That would be addressed by voter ID. But unfortunately, that's not how it's done. It's done by the insider, and the voter ID doesn't address that. So that's the issue I have with it, is that it's kind of a misdirected effort. I'm not saying it's an awful thing, but it doesn't really, it doesn't really achieve anything in my mind.
Well, you know, and it's interesting that with what's been going on with voters and elections over all these years, they continue to push this kind of technology. And they seem to be unscathed. Nobody really, Bev, I mean, you do a great job at this. Nobody gets in their way and stops them, though.
Right. Oh, that's right. They want it this way. You know, that's the conclusion I have come to with us. You know, we proved, everybody proved, the university science has proved, the secretaries of state studies proved that these machines could be tampered with by a chimpanzee. Did they change anything?
No.
No. And in fact, New Hampshire went out and bought the system that we demonstrated how to tamper with.
Ron is in.
That pretty much tells you they want it that way.
Let's go to Ron in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania now. Hi, Ron. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, I don't know if you ever heard of this outfit, but I got this in the mail November 1st, 2012. It says from the Americans for Limited Government from Fairfax, Virginia. Now, they have my name and address and six of my neighbors on there for my block, and then they have voted in 2008. All of us have a node on there, and I asked my neighbors, and they all voted, and just by coincidence, none of us voted for Obama. We all voted for McCain, but according to this paper, none of us voted in 2008. I don't know if you ever heard of this outfit or not.
I have heard of the outfit. There's an awful lot of outfits like that. And so what you're saying, if I'm understanding you correct, is that they reported that you did not vote, but you did.
Yeah.
Is that right? That is an issue, because one of the things, to corroborate what your caller has just said, one of the things I found in Tennessee was that thousands of voters' histories were being erased. And they called it, of course, human error. All right. But here's the impact of erasing voters' histories. After you don't vote for a certain number of elections, you get purged from the list and you can't vote, unbeknownst to you, because you've been voting. So why would you be purged? Well, if your history is purged out of the database, they can purge you as a voter.
And there you go.
And so, you know, when I looked at the Memphis area, Shelby County, Tennessee, and I found a whole row of people, all from one area, all one, you know, overwhelmingly black in that case. But then the Democratic Party said, let's look at that statewide. They found 11,000 people who'd had their histories erased, both Republicans and Democrats, by the way, just in the 3 months previous, you know. And so I kind of extrapolated that out. It was probably 50 to 100,000 people had had their histories erased. As a human error or a glitch, I don't care. Their histories were erased, and that puts them at much greater risk to not be able to vote. So I actually think that that is a potential strategy to tamper with elections, this accidental on purpose erasing of histories. And it definitely happens. I can tell you because I can prove it. I have the old databases and the new ones, and I have the old histories and the new ones. And the history evaporated.
And, of course, Bev, we've been talking about the midterm elections, but what about the presidential election in 2016? What are we going to see happen then?
Yes, that's the one I'm really gearing up for. And it's not because this one isn't hugely important. It's just that I have concluded that as of now, with the work I've done so far, nothing's going to change. The same old, I'll get the call from the candidate the day after the election. Oh, my God, they did this and this and this. And he may be absolutely right, but nothing can be done about it because you have to get the ball rolling a couple years ahead of time. And so I have some new strategies and a new book that I'll be coming out with in 2015, which will be a year before. And I hope that through that we can help to get some more awareness so people start making the right choices. What happened when I did my original book on electronic voting is that a lot of solutions that supposedly got put in place didn't actually solve anything because they weren't addressing the root problem, which was transparency. They were addressing, you know, an outside hacker from China might do something or other, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, you know, in the meantime, we're going to make it so that it's illegal to ever look at the paper ballots for any reason, you know. That's what they did in New Hampshire. They said, we have paper ballots, isn't that great? But no one can ever look at them.
What was the impetus that really got you started into all of this, Beth?
Well, you know, I've given some real thought to that, and a lot of it did have to do with the general unease I think a lot of us felt after the 2000 election. And it wasn't so much this candidate should have won or that candidate should have won. It was like, wow, this seems a little loosey-goosey. You know? We don't seem to be accounting for things in a very sensible way. And when you have loosey-goosey accounting, people steal. And that really got me interested. It was like I had written about financial matters and banking matters and so forth. I'm a professional writer. And I just, you know, to me it was like this huge gap that a truck could roll through. It was like, well, we're not accounting for the votes properly. So if you're not doing the accounting, guess what's going to happen? In every case, when you don't account for money, someone decides to step up and take some.
So true. Bev, hang with us. We're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM and take some final phone calls with you. Bev's website, blackboxvoting.org, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Extremely important subject for your future, your kids' future, and just about everybody else you care about. I'm George Inori, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Have you watched our television program yet, Beyond Belief? Well, you can get information, of course, at our website, and just take a look at it. It is free for 10 days. A lot of people are signing up, watching it, truly enjoying it, not just because of that program, but you get to watch all the network shows that are available. It's almost like Netflix. Go to this website, beyondbelief.com, www.beyondbelief.com. Welcome back to Coast, Bev Harris with us, our final segment. And Bev, of course, the old book, Black Box Voting, still available to people?
Oh, yeah, I made it free. It's on my website. It's on blackboxvoting.org. And you can download it chapter by chapter. Because, you know, it's 10 years old, but it's still got a lot of good stuff in it.
Sure does. Let's go to Cameron, first-time caller in Seattle, Washington. Cameron, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So my question is, the 2004 Rossi Gregoire gubernatorial election. She had mentioned it earlier. I had voted in that election. I had my initial ballot sent back to me because my signature didn't match, and my next notice from them was sent back to me saying that my vote had been discounted. That election went to 3 recounts. It was my first time voting. I have not voted since because it was such a negative experience. And my question is, why should I even vote anymore? Because I feel like it doesn't get counted.
Well, I'm glad you asked that. By the way, I live in Washington State, too, and I find it very difficult to vote, although I do vote. But it's very difficult because Washington State is another state that strips your privacy away and downloads. It has attachments to each ballot that show how everybody voted. And it's really painful. But with enough ballots coming in, with enough people voting, it's difficult to tamper with an election. It is possible for a candidate who wins in a huge landslide to actually overrun tampering of the vote. What happened in the Rossi-Gregoire race, as we know, is they were very, very close, and there was all kinds of shenanigans. And Dean Logan, who was, now he's down in Los Angeles, but he was there. He literally just, every time they had a new recount, he found more ballots, you know, pulled another bag of ballots out of his back pocket. I mean, how this man has any credibility anywhere, I have no idea. He's just now in Los Angeles, from what I understand, arranging for an untested, unknown manufacturer, sole source bidding to take over the voting machines here. So it's tough to vote. However, you know, I still think it's worth doing, although I have to say I cringe because voting in Washington State and in Colorado, the government is downloading how you vote. And I can't stand that. It's not that I'm scared of it. It just offends me deeply.
Yeah. You know, Bev, it's like so many other things, you know, even like national security. You know, they may be monitoring things, and one might say, well, you know what, I'm not doing anything. They don't care about me. That's not the point. The issue is they're invading your privacy.
Right. And, you know, even with the national security thing, which I think the ballot, downloading this, the ballot, how people voted, is it's kind of, you know, that's a good parallel for it. But, you know, you can't even say that it's potentially saving lives. I mean, all they're doing is just downloading how you voted. It's just, there's no excuse for it. But interestingly, some of the same guys who are involved with the companies that produce the software that download, you know, that take the political privacy are definitely big national security guys. I mean, some of the guys involved in that have been Robert Gates, former defense secretary, Chuck Hagel was actually the chairman and CEO of the biggest voting machine company in the U.S. And that does make you think. I suppose there must be some sort of a safety valve that folks on that level think that they have if they can control elections. I'm not saying they use it, but it's deeply offensive.
Next up, we have Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut. Hey, Bill. Thanks for holding.
Hi, George. Hi. Hi, Beth. Hi. In addition to what you're talking about the mechanism, mechanics of voting, whether it's touch screen or mechanical voting or other kinds of voting, what really bothers me is not at all the individual voting fraud, which I think is very minuscule in the country and is a ruse put on by the Republicans. What really bothers me as a member of the American Civil Liberties Union, myself, an ACLU member, is the Republicans in certain states, particularly, for example, in Pennsylvania and Ohio, and I think Florida and other states, where they're trying to disenfranchise or make people go through hoops or put on what amounts to poll tax for people who are minorities, African Americans, Hispanics, elderly, the young people, disabled people, so people who generally vote Democratic, like myself, have a hard time voting, which are disenfranchising hundreds of thousands of people potentially in these states. For example, in Ohio, there's a state senator, a Democratic State Senator Nina Turner, I think her name is, who's running for Secretary of State. I hope she wins in Ohio because the present Republican Secretary of State in Ohio has done what the Secretary of State in Pennsylvania did in 2012 when he said something like, quote, a new law in Pennsylvania will get Mitt Romney elected in Pennsylvania done. Maybe you remember that. So I think you know what I'm
yes,
talking
I do.
About.
Yeah. 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 And you know, what you bring up is an interesting point. By the way, it's not just the Republicans. Both parties have decided that it's open season on election procedures. And they are both tackling things that they feel will be to their advantage and basically producing propaganda. And, you know, I mentioned to a very prominent reporter recently, I said, you know, I wish that they would just at least look at the data and the facts before they're spewing out all these things, because the media is following along to a large extent. And she said, oh, you're so old school. And the more, you know, I laughed at first, but I have to tell you, that statement sort of bothered me all week. It's like, this is just treating election procedures, which belong to the public, as a partisan playground. We shouldn't be surprised, but both, you know, definitely the Republicans are trying to close the door on certain groups of voters. However, the Democrats are trying to remove controls completely with this crazy out of control absentee stuff they're doing in several states. I mean, it's absurd what they're doing, and it has no accountability whatsoever, and it's ripe for the old-fashioned type of vote stuffing using new technology. So, but the point is, both parties do it, and they push forward their case with these talking points, and neither party is telling the truth.
And why don't they tell the truth? Why can't we get the truth from them, Beth?
I know. It's, well, you know, and I feel like, well, maybe politicians have never told the truth, but at least the media, you know, I think my biggest disappointment is with print reporters. Now, radio is still pretty good, you know, unless you're just dealing with one of the really opinionated shock shows. But print media reporters, you know, have traditionally had some pretty darn good fact-checking investigative reporters, and that's gone. You know, now they're just, you know, parroting the talking points of whichever side they want to cover. And that is really a shame.
It's a huge shame. Let's go to Xander, Manhattan in New York. Xander, thanks. Go ahead.
How are you doing, Mr. George and Miss?
All is good. Bev Harris.
How are you doing, ma'am? Let me ask you a question. Okay, according to the 2000, the Bush-Al Gore era, I'm still kind of asking myself this question. Does this have any connection to what Obama has said according to the Benghazi, the NSA attack? Does this have any like connection to the Bush administration also, or is it like a severable type of thing? Because I'm just kind of curious.
I have a little distortion. Maybe you could paraphrase that for me real quickly because I couldn't quite catch all his words.
Well, Xander, try it one more time.
Okay. What I'm saying is, according to the 2000 era of the Bush-Al Gore era, and when Bush said he didn't know where the weapons of mass destruction were, and now we have Obama talking about the, he didn't know about the incident in Benghazi, and then he said he had his phone and his pen with the executive order. What is it? What did he actually mean by that? Does that have anything to do with Hitler?
Well, you know, they're not, politicians don't tell the truth, and unfortunately, people accept it. And by the way, election officials don't tell the truth either. When you hear these weird glitches that people are hearing, they tell these whoppers that don't make any sense. So same with the voting machine vendors. You know, we seem to have lost track of the idea that politics is actually supposed to be based on some sort of ethics. I realize that there's, you know, politics is, you know, full of all kinds of shenanigans, but we seem to have gotten so far away from any sort of ethics or honor or truth telling, like people don't even expect it anymore. And that's where I think the media and folks like, you know, writers like myself do come in. It's really important to have somebody tracking the facts
It sure is. Terry in Seattle, Washington, will get you in here. Terry, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Beth. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing. Thank you. Go ahead, Terry. Terry has disappeared. Let's go to Jeff in Canada, though. Jeffrey, go ahead.
Thanks, George. I live in a municipality called Orillia. We're just north of Toronto, where you're going to be next Saturday, by the way. About five of my contemporaries are going to be trying to get down to see you. Anyway, 2 years ago, I was a member of the Ad Hoc Committee for Municipal Electoral Reform here in Orillia, and we did some research, and the numbers are quite significant. We have a voting population of about 22,000, and for us in this municipality to have a secured server, to have online voting, it was going to cost us close to $50,000, and the research that we did determined that it may, and I emphasize may, increase the participation by no more than 4%. So it was determined that our committee recommended that we would not go to online voting. And I just thought that, you know, those numbers can be easily extrapolated for smaller, larger municipalities, and I think the numbers would stand up to be the same, whether it's in Canada or the United States. And up here, we only have municipal elections every 4 years. So the cost was absolutely prohibitive.
That's really interesting. I would love to, if you go to blackboxvoting.org, there's an email. I would love to get contact so that I could get that study. I understand there was one like that in Vancouver as well. And these are really important because the internet voting proponents are saying that it will vastly, cut costs, and it doesn't. I mean, it's shocking. You'd think it would, but it is actually very, very expensive from what I understand. And by the way, so is vote by mail. Absentee voting is crazy expensive.
Well, it sure is. And with this absentee voting, how did they come up with so many dead people?
Well, if you don't clean the lists ever, California's bizarre. You know, California has Silicon Valley. You'd think it'd be the most technologically advanced, and they still haven't come up with a statewide computerized voter registration database that's clean. I don't get it.
No, not at all. Okay, a couple more calls. Dale is in Marysville, Washington, west of the Rockies. Hey, Dale, go ahead.
How are you doing tonight?
Good. All is well, sir.
All is well. Yeah, I just have a question. I'm an ex-felon from like 30 years ago.
Okay.
And I've been told off and on that I can vote and I can't vote. I just want to, can you give me any idea what the standings of myself is?
Depends on which state you're in. A lot of states nowadays, some states allow ex-felons to vote after they've served their sentence. Some states you have to apply to get your right to vote reinstated, and there are some states, a few states, where you cannot ever vote. And some states even let you vote when you're in prison. So you actually have, it's follow the bouncing ball. This is also an area where there's quite a bit of change right now. There are groups lobbying for felon rights right now. And by the way, regardless of how you feel about felon voting rights, it is definitely an area for manipulating elections. In Florida, it was over 50,000. I think it may have been as high as 90,000 people were removed from the voting rolls claiming they were felons when they actually weren't even felons. They just matched their name. You know, Bob Jones. Oh, here's another Bob Jones. Kick him off the list. So felon voting rights is actually a kind of a hotbed of activity right now, and you could probably tell very quickly by going on the Washington Secretary of State website what the latest status in the state of Washington is.
Nolan is in New Orleans, and welcome to the show. Nolan, go ahead.
Hey, I'm enjoying your show, George. My name's Nolan Boutte, and I'm my state vice president of Crime Fighters. We just did a little radio show. We got a program called Crime Wave. Anyway, it's in La Rose, Louisiana.
Okay.
And we just did a show on voting fraud. It's called Hacking Democracy on YouTube. But we got this big
That's
election.
That's me. I'm the person in Hacking Democracy.
Oh, okay. I'm
there you go.
I just turned in. I can't believe I've been listening to your show for how many years, and I can't believe I got through. But anyway, Susan Bernacker, I don't know if you're familiar with that name. That's
Yes. See, I was with her in the movie you're talking about, Hacking Democracy. There's a scene with Susan Bernacker and me and some other people in the elections office. Yeah, she witnessed and videotaped the voting machine. But go ahead, yes.
Well, we got this big election coming up for Senate with Mary Landrieu and, of course, Bill Cassidy and Tea Party candidate Manus. And we're just worried about they're going to steal the election. And, you know, it's been going across the country. Now, there's a way that you can just watch when you push that button. You just take when you push the button, it shows your candidate. And that's you got maybe a light. Just to make sure, if you push the button, let's say if I push it for Rob Manus, Tea Party candidate, and the light comes on his name, does that mean it's gonna? I voted for Rob Manus, and also, why don't they have a paper trail? I cannot believe they don't have a paper trail, so they can go back to see if there's any kind of discrepancies.
Yeah, these touchscreen voting machines, like they're using, are ridiculous. And by the way, there is something I want to say that's very important, because they've already been caught this election in Maryland and in Illinois early voting for the wrong candidate. And the program, and they claim it's a calibration error, but it's actually a program. What happens is you have to watch that screen very carefully. And when you go to the final screen where it says these are the people you voted for and one of them is wrong, then you get a chance to go correct it. And if you are very vigilant and correct it one or two or three times, it will finally flip over to the right guy. But of course, what that does is it shaves a bunch of votes off from the people who didn't happen to notice on the proofreading screen. Those machines are dreadful. They need to be thrown in the Boston Bay, except that would pollute it.
Bev, we are almost out of time. Let's keep in touch, and we will be talking as we get into 2016, and when your new work comes out next year,
let's
get you back
that'll
be on,
fun.
Okay? All right. Thank you so much, Bev. Bev Harris, Black Box Voting. Up next, Heidi Hollis joins me as we talk about the Shadow People on Coast to Coast AM, and also some of her latest work on the Hat Man. The Hat Man? Well, stick around and find out who that is.